listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to Football in Europe. I'm your host, Rob Daly. Alongside me, as always, Chris Parrott. Chris, hello.
Hello, Rob.
Today on the show, Andy Brassel will be talking Valencia.
Lord AB.
Lord AB, the finest voice in European football. Andy Brassel will be joining us to discuss Valencia, Barcelona's weekend defeat to Celta Vigo and Monaco's title push in France, plus some more Mario Balotelli headlines because he can't keep out of them. What was your weekend, Chris? You went to see your beloved Ipswich Town.
I did. I've supported them all my life. I'm struggling to think of a worse game of football, honestly, than I've seen on Saturday.
Come on.
No.
Lost 1-0 to Huddersfield.
Lost 1-0 to Huddersfield. Jurgen Klopp's former number two at Dortmund, Wagner, has come in and is doing a brilliant job. They're top of the league, Huddersfield, ahead of Newcastle and Norwich, and putting teams like Aston Villa, who are miles off the pace, into, let's just say, clearly a good appointment, and actually an interesting one, because had some guy been number two in England to, I don't know, I'm trying to, someone who reached the final of the Champions League and played fantastic football.
Paul Clement.
Yeah, I mean, Paul, he did get a gig. Steve McLaren is a decent example. He ended up getting a Premier League job at Middlesbrough. And no one, I don't think anyone in the second tier now looks to that type of person. They all go for the same old guys who have done their been it before.
Well, Warnock and all this.
Warnock, I mean, you can even say McCarthy, frankly. Bruce, although he wins promotions, Bruce, in fairness.
You want McCarthy out, do you, as well?
I think I am leaning to that after Saturday.
Oh, poor old Mick.
But maybe Championship clubs should, if they don't have millions and millions, then doing what Huddersfield have done and getting a highly respected number two who worked wonders in Germany, who wants his first job in management, and he's got the job in there. I'd love to see them go up. It would be a brilliant story.
And they did the Klopp.
They did the Klopp.
German football celebration.
German football celebration at the end as Portman Road emptied quickly. Here's a little Reuben for you.
Okay.
Since Ipswich sold Daryl Murphy, who isn't in the Newcastle squad at all, we have not scored from open play. And in the last three games, they have had one shot on target in each of those three games.
Oh, that's bleak.
That's bad. And Saturday's was a deflected effort.
I'll tell you what wasn't bleak. Zenit's 4-2 whenever Sparta I commentated.
That isn't. I told you, Luchescu, slow start, lost Hulk. I think Zenit are going to win the title.
It's all booted off about the ref. He gave two penalties, both in isolation, the correct call, but the ref had such little control of the game. There was about a million yellow cards. It was amazing people weren't sent off. All the Spartak players came out, were slagging him off after. Sergei Ivanov, after the match. Denis Glushakov, the Spartak captain.
Oh, that's
very
a surprise.
Unhappy.
Glushakov was unhappy, wasn't he?
Oh, my God. He should have been sent off for mouthing off, to be honest. But Zenit really riding high. I think they're top now because CSKA Moscow dropped points against Rostov. So
yes.
I think Zenit are top. Okay.
He's a great coach, isn't he?
Who, Luchescu?
I mean, I've just said that maybe teams should go for young, up-and-coming coaches, but then some of the old guard who just... He knows how to set up a team and be very successful.
Did brilliant work as Shakhtar.
Yeah, in very trying circumstances at the end.
Yeah.
Very shrewd appointment. Given they lost their best player in the summer, the club was in the... Andre Villas-Boas's reign in St. Petersburg wasn't very happy at all. And he's gone in there and they seem to be a happy camp. Could be a decent bet for the Europa League, I think.
Yeah, won two out of two, Zenit. They have Giuliano.
Mm.
Brazilian guy who's replaced Hulk. He looks absolutely incredible.
He's massive as well, isn't he?
He's a stocky little...
Yeah, he is.
...little wombat of a man. Alexandru Macea, that was for you. He says, keep talking about Eastern European football. I'll be paying attention. Well, we've got a switch now, Chris. We're going to talk about loads of things, about the Bundesliga, Serie A, La Liga, everything. Don't worry about it. But we've got Rubens. These are our favourite facts and stats of the week. Chris, do you have yours to hand?
I do. I've just looked on my phone because I saved it.
Okay.
So, we're going to speak about it later. Barcelona lost to Celta Vigo at the weekend. Since the start of 2015, the great all-conquering Barcelona have conceded four goals domestically on four occasions.
Okay, what does that tell me?
I don't think that Juventus or Bayern or other totally dominant teams. So it tells me that domestically they might not have it all the way, but in terms of winning the Champions League, that's a porous defence.
Some other Rubens into us. Kurt Hurd says, Dundalk have earned the same amount of money playing 3 hours of Europa League football than they would have done winning their league each year to 2044.
That's very good.
€3 million. And that I was in Dublin on Thursday for work, and the guys were just talking about how financially that is winning the lottery, beating Maccabi Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
Doubleheader against Zenit to come.
Well, yeah, also as well, you just think they probably will win the league every season until 2044 now with that sort of money.
Inverted Winger says, Mario Balotelli now has the best goals per minute ratio of anyone in the top five European leagues with a minimum of 5 goals. He gets 1 goal every 51 minutes. We're going to be talking about Balotelli later on. Chris, here's my one. Iniesta's 600th appearance. Both of ours Barcelona related. 600th appearance for Barcelona at the weekend. How old's Iniesta? 32, is he, or something? About 32?
Yeah, probably.
Only Xavi, 767, has more. Is he going to catch that 50 appearances?
I don't think so.
Probably not.
I was just going to say, I mean, that is an impressive Ruben, but also, just Xavi, 767 appearances.
I know, have a rest, mate.
I mean, Giggs was what? I think Giggs got to 800.
Giggs was infinity or something, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think it
just
was
still,
infinity.
He's
nine
still
a billion, yeah.
Chris, let's talk about England very briefly. David Levy has tweeted to say, any chance you could cover the international coverage of the Big Sam scandal on Monday?
So I picked, a week ago.
I know, yeah.
We were sitting here and we were none the wiser.
No. I thought it was, we were together for Champions League coverage, weren't we, on Tuesday? Wasn't it Tuesday?
Yeah, I think it was Tuesday.
He's asking on Monday, today.
Yes, sorry.
Sorry, David.
Sorry.
So here are some of the headlines from the foreign press. The Spanish newspaper AS. The Telegraph, catch coach in corruption case using hidden camera.
Is that a headline? That's a statement, isn't it?
I know, it is. I forget which other paper had this. The Sting. I think it was another Spanish paper. And Marca had
Scandal in England.
The national team, coach Sam Allardyce, is in a mess. Global embarrassment, Chris, for the FA and for English football.
Yeah, which is probably one of the main reasons why he lost his job. That sense of, had he been a club coach, he probably would have survived. He might have survived anyway. But if you are the head coach of England, you have to uphold certain responsibilities, and yeah, as a global position, I don't think they couldn't do anything else bar get rid of him. So you know, I think the very fact that that is front page in so many countries is you know, it just proves why the FA had to act swiftly and decisively.
Ralph Rangnick has been the main man linked to the role.
Yeah, apart from Gareth Southgate.
Apart from Gareth Southgate. And we'll talk about his squad selection in a moment. But can you tell us a little bit about Rangnick, Chris? Because I think there'll be a lot of people who think, I don't know who Ralph Rangnick is, necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a coach since the early 80s. Probably is one of his main achievements. He got Schalke to the semi-final of the Champions League. But since then, he's currently the director of football at RB Leipzig, who we've mentioned a lot on the podcast, but who are flying high in the Bundesliga. I think interesting as well, so he's 58. That's his current job. He's been a coach at Schalke, as I mentioned, Salzburg, Hoffenheim, Stuttgart, Hanover. He's vastly experienced. And there's a quote from him that basically, well, he says he received a phone call from Dan Ashworth, who's the FA technical director,
right?
Who tried to hire him when he was at West Brom. And he said that he wanted me to become the England national team coach. I went there and it was a good meeting. But then basically the FA decided, which indicates to me that Dan Ashworth lost his argument with the FA, that they preferred an English coach.
Oh, so that was in the summer.
So basically he was Dan Ashworth's number one candidate in the summer. I think you can read into that. Certain people at the FA wanted an English coach, so we didn't get the job then. Which makes you wonder, A, what has changed in 8 weeks, 68 days or whatever it was, if he were to get it now, and B, whether Rangnick now, who seems to be in a very good project despite everyone not liking Leipzig as a job and as a project, quite exciting, would he now want to come to England? It is the England job. It's very well paid. Do you want to put up that level of scrutiny? I don't know.
Yeah, he's seen it, hasn't he? This is how Rangnick described his own philosophy: aggressive forward defending and pressing, playing in private possession and directly to the front. Lateral and back passes are rather not so much in demand. The aim is to develop teams, not soloists.
He's got the job from that, description for me. That's exactly what we need.
Glenn Johnson's in the squad, Chris.
Yes, he is.
Gareth Southgate's
first squad.
Rashford's in.
Rashford's in, no
That's
surprise.
Good.
Lingard's in, no surprise, given that Lallana is injured. Johnson's in because of an injury to Klein.
Klein.
As well. He knows Lingard from the under-21s. He scored a brilliant goal, actually, last summer at the European Championships, which if that is Gareth Southgate's...
Last under-21
yeah,
summer.
England were hopeless. They were. They got knocked out in the group stage. They played Harry Kane up front on his own, isolated.
He looked knackered, isolated.
Yeah, no surprise that Lingard's in it. I just wonder with Johnson that he's 32 now. We're playing Malta and Slovenia. Not two footballing powerhouses. I just wonder if that spot in the squad, did it have to be a right back? It could. And Johnson's 32. He's going to be 34.
So who's our other right backs?
It's only Kyle Walker.
Kyle Walker.
But I think against those two, could you not? I mean, Troy Deeney is, I'm not sure, but someone like that.
Hold on, you want to bring in Troy Deeney for Nathaniel Clyne?
No. The point is, I don't think you need two right backs in this squad. Kyle Walker is going to start.
Smalling can play there anyway, can't he?
Yeah, but we don't need two right backs against Malta and
Slovenia. No, but I'm saying if one gets injured, you need another one.
True. Yeah. Well, probably bring in Ashley Young. No, but do you see what I mean?
No, I
just think, I wonder if it's a chance for someone perhaps else to have come in. I don't think Ben Johnson's going to go to the World Cup when he's 34.
No. Okay.
Daniel Sturridge.
Bundesliga. Bayern dropped points for the first time this season. Joshua Kimmich scored the opener, his fifth goal in six, but Anthony Modest on fire, the striker, getting the equaliser, ends Bayern's 100% start to the Bundesliga season.
Yeah, and first non-win in the weekend that Pep Guardiola lost his 100% start. Carlo Ancelotti has done the same. Bad week, really, given they lost to Atletico in the Champions League. I was just wondering, do you think against Atleti, they played Alonso and Vidal? They didn't start Kimmich. Do you think it was slightly negative?
I don't know. I mean, but Guardiola would play Alonso as a holder and then have Vidal and Ribery and all these guys ahead of him.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure.
I mean, they had enough attacking talent, certainly, on the pitch. But it was
scoring against Atletico is impossible.
Oh, particularly in Madrid. It's brilliant, isn't it?
You can't get through.
Because they're the first real team, I think, in my lifetime. Loads of teams you've seen have been outstanding going forward and you're like, wow, you know what they're going to do, but you can't stop them. I haven't seen many who you know what they're going to do. They're going to set up so you can't score against them, yet you still can't score against them. Anyone?
Truly outstanding. Arnold Schwarzenegger was in attendance, obviously, and at the Bayern game.
Where does he live now? Do we know?
I don't know where Arnold Schwarzenegger... He's probably still in America, is he?
But do you remember when he was governor?
Yeah, he's governor of California.
It's mad when you think about it.
Well, their president's going to be even more mental.
Well,
mate.
That's true, yeah. Arnie, you missed your chance, mate. You should have gone for it.
You probably could have got it. Simon Zola missed a last-minute one-on-one. Timo Horn made one of the saves of the season to deny Thomas Müller in that game. Cologne fourth in the table. Surprising result, but not necessarily a crazy one.
They'd be getting very excited there, wouldn't they?
In Cologne?
Yeah.
Oh, rightly so. They're very efficient.
Yeah.
Very efficient. I saw them win at Schalke. Commented on that. I feel like it was a week and a half ago now. 1-3-1. Absolutely no problem for them at all. Anthony Modest is on fire. Bayern put that defeat out of their minds, Chris, by donning Lederhosen.
Yes.
And heading
this
down to Oktoberfest for a few beers.
I know. I mean, if ever there's a reason to sign for Bayern, it must be that once a year. Get your own little tent there. I always remember when Guardiola was there with a massive Paul Lanner. And he just thought, that's so un-Spanish, it's spectacular.
It didn't look right. Ancelotti was asked about it the other week, and he said they were asking him about Oktoberfest, and he was like, I'm more of a wine person. But he had the big old beers.
Was there a stat that, I don't know, this might be, or is it, Ruben?
Thomas Müller drank four beers.
Thomas Müller drank 9 pints in 10 seconds. No, that they haven't lost during Oktoberfest. Oh, I need to get this up.
Oh, Chris, they did just lose the other day.
No, domestically. They haven't lost during, because everyone's like, oh, are they going to take their eye off the ball? They're having a drink, etc. And it's something like they haven't lost during Oktoberfest for X amount of years.
Hey, let me tell you something.
Yep.
Non-alcoholic beer in Germany, one of the selling points of it is that they say it's isotonic, which is why you see athletes on the adverts for non-alcoholic, like Bitburger and stuff like that, the German national team.
Really?
Isotonic.
Non-alcoholic beer.
Non-alcoholic beer.
Or is it naturally isotonic?
Well,
otherwise,
maybe.
That is a niche market.
I think this is about Coca Pops. I don't think Coca Pops were designed to turn the milk chocolatey. I think it was a byproduct. So I wonder.
Well, whenever someone found it, because I do some sporting events, and you often see. That makes me sound like a.
Get out for that!
No. Okay.
You do. It's really impressive. You're not at the Olympics.
Well, you never know.
I do some
sporting events.
Good grip.
Okay, well, I could boast and say what I've done, but I don't. I don't like
Iron
to.
Man,
don't.
Iron
yeah,
Man.
Yeah, exactly.
Incredible,
yeah.
Actually, you did that.
But people were drinking beer at the end of that.
Isotonic.
And I couldn't think of anything worse at the time, but now I will.
Mate. Let's move on. Schalke finally win a league game. They lost their opening five, remember. They beat Gladbach 4-0. Brilliant Bolo scored twice. Gladbach are so bad away from home. I think it's 7 points from 14 away games in the league, but they've won 11 at home in a row.
Yeah.
Or something.
That is, yeah.
Curious, isn't it?
That is very curious. Yeah, maybe Andre Schubert with his contract extension. He's got more time to work out why. That's the case. But that's a heck of a win for Schalke. You've got a thing. You don't like the Klaas-Jan Huntelaar. You don't like Klaas-Jan Huntelaar.
I think they need to bin him off as their first choice striker. Apparently, there is a bit of a reluctance to drop him. He's very much a figurehead in that team. But he was ill at the weekend. So they finally gave Brilliant Bolo, the guy who did so well with Basel, youngster, Swiss international. And he scored two. Second goal, very nice indeed. And I just wonder if maybe that just gives Marcus Weinzierl, the head coach, the opportunity to say, maybe we're better without Huntelaar in the starting 11.
Yeah.
But they have won two from two in the Europa League. So first win for Schalke, and they're out of the relegate, the bottom two anyway, in Germany. Leverkusen 2, Dortmund 0. Quick one on this, Chris. Borussia Dortmund missed there was an opportunity to go level on points with Bayern.
Yeah, you have to take it. I think if you're really going to challenge Bayern and win the Bundesliga, when they don't win, you really have
tough
to pick
game,
up.
Though,
all...
eh? Yeah, no, Real Madrid in the week. Yeah. Thomas Tuchel said... You could see our physical and mental fatigue.
Yeah, and they're a very young team. And, you know, I think consistently winning might be a problem. Although they're probably going to finish second or third at worst. And Leverkusen's one of their top three hardest games of the season.
Yes.
But still, I think, if Bayern don't win and if you really are going to challenge the title, I think you have to pick up 3 points when they don't. It feels like a big missed opportunity.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Chicharito scored. Late goal, wonderful counter-attack. 6 goals in 7 for Cheech.
Yeah.
33 and 48 for Leverkusen since leaving Manchester United.
And it was his goal in last midweek in the Champions League at Monaco was his 100th in Europe, I think, since he,
it was, yeah. Yeah. In Europe, in playing in Europe.
Yeah, I mean, they would do well to become the first man to score 100 goals, which Ronaldo's
has getting close
two
to
that. Away.
Jonathan Stephen says his highlight of the weekend was Leverkusen suddenly finding their form and beating Dortmund. He says, unfortunately, just before my Spurs have to play them.
Yeah, but the way Tottenham are going, wow. And the way Son Heung-min is going at the moment, former Leverkusen
against
player.
His former club.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Should be great. Okay, a couple of minor headlines from Germany before Chris is going to give you your trivia teaser for the week. Markus Gisdol lost his first game in charge, official game in charge of Hamburg. 3-0 at Hertha. The Berliners are up to second in the table. Serge Gnabry scored again for Werder Bremen in a 2-2 draw at Darmstadt. It was Alex Nuri's first game as permanent boss of Bremen.
Is he on loan from Arsenal?
No.
No, he's gone.
Arsenal mucked up. I know he's had his injuries, but all 18 Bundesliga clubs apparently were interested in signing Serge Gnabry when he was available.
That's interesting, yeah.
And Frankfurt suffered their first loss of the season at Freiburg, who might just have enough in their home form to stay in the Bundesliga. Chris, what is this week's trivia teaser from @BigFootyTeaser?
It is. Name the 6 players to win 4 different European League titles and also play in the Premier League.
Oh, Ibra's got to be one of those, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's La Liga, has he won, did he win the Eredivisie?
Yeah, I think so have I.
Swedish League, probably.
Yeah, he's probably won more than that, yeah. Ibra's won. Who are the other 5?
We'll tell you at the end of the show. Are they going to tweet us back?
Yeah, I've got the answer.
Oh, you've got the answer? So is Ibra one or not?
Well, you have to find out at the end of the show. Of course Ibra's won.
Oh, fine, okay. Okay, let's speak to Andy Brassel.
For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.
Joining us now is European football journalist Andy Brassel. Andy, welcome back to the podcast for the first time this season.
Good morning, fellas. Thank you for having me for my season debut.
Mate, we love having you on. We've called you the king of European football or something. I can't even remember
the Lord.
The Lord Bentner of European football, Andy.
What a compliment.
I saw you on BT Sport last night, mate. Very enjoyable indeed on the European football show. Can you tell us a little bit about Saint-Étienne? I know where your alliances are in French football, so can you tell us a little bit about how they got on this weekend?
Yeah, well, it was the derby, which we were lucky enough to watch after that, and it was a really big one because it was the 113th derby between Lyon and Saint-Étienne, but the first at Parc Ouel, Lyon's fantastic new stadium, and in front of a record crowd there, domestic crowd of 57,500. And Lyon had a load of injuries as well. Of course, no Lacazette. No Cornet. He had suspensions for Gonalon, Yango Biwa. So a lot of leadership and a lot of goals in the case of Lacazette as well. I mean, they'd won 3 of 14 before last night without Lacazette over the last two and a bit seasons. So it was always going to be a challenge. A lot of injuries for Saint Etienne as well. But you know, the way they play, it's about collective. And made it really difficult for Lyon again. But Lyon defended better than they have done in recent weeks, and they were a bit sharper at the other end as well. Because you know, you could argue that they should have won the previous two games against Lorient and Sevilla in the Champions League, and didn't manage to score in either of those. So it was clear that goals were going to be a problem. They went with this sort of front two of Nabil Fekir and Mathieu Valbuena. Not a great night for Valbuena, who again went off after about an hour, sat there shaking his head on the bench, and I think it's becoming clearer and clearer that it's just not going to work for him at Lyon. He's a player who takes too many touches for their style of play. And
I thought it was a great move at the time, Andy, by Lyon.
Yeah, you know? It did look that way. It did look that way. But he's someone who likes to dictate and hold on to the ball for a long time. At Lyon, it's all about one and two touches. And he's just a bit slow for them, really, in a weird kind of way, which is something that people wouldn't associate him with him because he's such an active player. But it really changed when Rashid Gazelle came on. The team clicked a bit better, and Gazelle scored the goal that clinched it in the end.
Andy, if we can stay in France, PSG, a week ago there was talk of it being crisis, and they beat Ludogorets in the Champions League, they beat Bordeaux at the weekend, but it doesn't, I was reading L'Equipe this morning, it doesn't seem a very happy camp still. There's all these stories going out. How do you assess Emery's start?
Well, I have to say, firstly, Chris, that the class of dressing room mole you get at Paris Saint-Germain is on a different level.
Mate, Chris was saying that just before we came on air.
I was thinking that every week there seemed... I mean, today it was that there was a, you know, heated exchange between Emery and some of the senior players. Yeah, it doesn't... That's not particularly conducive either, I don't think, to a working football club, is it? You think of, you know, like when Manchester United had that dynasty, there were never any stories that came out.
But this has always been part of Paris Saint-Germain and Marseille and Lyon and French football culture, basically.
All of them.
If you read L'Equipe, you will not only find out who's in and out of the team, you'll find out what your star player's earning, what he had for breakfast last Tuesday, and what he's going to have for dinner next Thursday. So, you know, it's just something you have to live with. Obviously, dissent rises a little bit when things are more difficult. But I think an example of how quickly it can turn around is, you know, on the cover after that Ludogorets, and you're talking about of L'Equipe, a picture of Cavani celebrating one of his goals. And it said, fortunately, he's here. And you think, would they have said this after the Arsenal game? I don't think so. Slated left,
God,
right and centre after that.
Yeah. I saw one thing. I think L'Equipe said something like he's indispensable with Zlatan-esque performances or something like that.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, really. I mean, I think the truth is somewhere in between. He's still getting used to being a centre-forward again. And I think if we look at that as an allegory of a wider trend... As Chris was saying, I think they're just getting used to things under Emery. It is a very different style of play. And it's something that they hope will, and they've always hoped, will stand them in good stead when it comes to the sharp end of European competition. But, you know, Monaco and Nice, even though they started the season brilliantly, aren't too far away from them. PSG have had their worst start in, 4 years, but they've managed to keep pace. So hopefully, long may it continue with Nice and Monaco, and we'll have an exciting title race.
All right, let's have one question on each of those clubs then, because Monaco got a 7-0 win at Metz. It seems that defeat to Nice, Andy, that 4-0 one, I think about 10 days ago now, was a bit of a red herring. You know, they do look like genuine, at least Champions League contenders again, in terms of getting into places and maybe title contenders.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing, Rob, I think, about the Nice result, that they've looked so convincing on the road. It's not just about the 7-0 on Saturday against Metz, and I know Metz aren't a big team, they're just promoted this season, but they've looked good so far this season. They've looked very, very tidy, and they've got a good goal scorer of their own in Mevlut Erding, who's been quite prolific so far this season. But they were open, and Monaco managed to take them apart, and you know, we've seen their efficiency and how deadly they can be in front of goal in the game at Lille, where they won 4-1. In the game at Spurs, of course, in the Champions League, where they won 2-1. But they look very, very tidy on the road. And interestingly as well, after that, the top scorers in the division, they scored 22 times in 8 games. And, you know, we think of Leonardo Jardim as a very defensive coach, but they're opening up a little more. And importantly, they've sorted themselves out of the back. This, I think, is what's going to give them longevity. Like, the Kamil Glick is one of the best signings anywhere this summer for €8 million. It's just an extraordinary bargain. Of course, he's got that very valuable goal against Leverkusen in the Champions League. They've got options, and tactically, they've got options. This season is where Jardim's starting to come into his own. You know, they've played 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, 4-4-2, even at times. And, you know, they've got the players to carry it off.
Yeah, I really like Glick. He was brilliant in France as well at the Euros, wasn't he?
He was.
Super Mario, I'm not sure if we can call him this. A bizarre end to the Nice game, because he scored the winner against Lorient, and then he got sent off in a circumstance that I think only Mario Balotelli could.
I think he's been really unfortunate here. He got his first booking for taking his shirt off after scoring what did prove to be the winning goal later.
Great goal.
It was. And, you know, with all the talk about Balotelli's extracurricular behaviour and all the rest of it, you just forget what an incredibly clean hitter of a footballer he is. You know, he can strike the ball as well as anyone. And I think you could see that with most of his goals so far, but especially with that winner against Lorient. And it got booked for removing his shirt after that. Not quite as buff as his 2012 version, but I think he's really good with the chaps. Then afterwards there was this... there wasn't even a confrontation really on the touchline. He got the second booking for apparently putting his face in towards the defender who was arguing with us. I think it was Walid Mazloub, but I'm not sure.
Really harsh, wasn't it, mate? Really harsh red card.
He literally turned the other cheek. Yeah. The actual fact is, Captain Paul Bass pointed out afterwards. There's talk in France this week about maybe, of course, because UEFA revoked Marco Verratti's second booking against Arsenal, that maybe the LFP, the Ligue de Football Professionnel, would sort of take their lead and expunge Balotelli's second booking, because, of course, that's not protocol. And it would be a good thing, because the first game after the international break is at the Allianz Arena, at the Allianz Riviera, between Nice and Lyon, which is going to be a huge game. Of course, Lyon are going to have Lacazette back by then, so they'll have Lacazette and Fekir up front. I mean, it should be a tremendous game, and it would be a shame if Balotelli didn't make it.
Andy, there was one thing I forgot to ask you about, and that was the ultras at Paris Saint-Germain. Can you tell us a little bit about this? Because Jonathan Johnson's tweeted in to say the atmosphere of Parc des Princes with the ultras was back in the fold, superb at the weekend in that 2-0 win over Bordeaux. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Yeah, well, they've been banned for a very long time. And part of that was to do with security issues at the Parc des Princes, which were recurring a couple of years ago. But, you know, I think there's been a growing feeling amongst traditional Paris Saint-Germain fans, that that the whole Parc des Princes experience has just become a little bit sterile, really. Mm. So, I mean, Thiago Silva talked about it actually at length in the press conference that preceded the Bordeaux game, and he said, "Well, you know, it's great to have fans with us for the whole game and to make that bit of noise." I mean, it's, you know, it's something that you do get on Champions League nights. People forget, because Paris is this glamorous club, that the Parc des Princes can be really noisy, and really the team want that sort of level of noise for domestic matches as much as Champions League ones. And you know, it is one of the great experiences of French football, the atmosphere at the park.
Yeah, I mean, I went to the Parc des Princes for the first time at the Euros, actually, for the Austria game, when Ronaldo missed that penalty and Austrian fans are on the wind-up. And what was interesting was the Austrian fans do this thing where they bounce up and down over and over, and I can't quite remember the chant. I asked the fans, you know, what are you chanting? Why do you keep doing this bouncing thing? Because the Parc des Princes was literally bouncing. I don't quite understand how concrete can bend. But and he told me the grounds in Austria, they have to make bounce-proof. Because of this celebration that they do, you can't have this. They were like, this is not good that it's bouncing so much, but we're going to do it.
Leave.
We're still going to do it anyway. Yes, that was it. Chris wanted to ask you about Valencia as well, Andy, before you go.
Yeah, Cesare Prandelli. I mean, it's been... Valencia seem to have been in turmoil, although, I mean, they lost at the weekend after two wins in La Liga, I think. But what do you make of that appointment? Do you think any coach can be successful with the current regime above the coach?
Well, I think that's a big question, isn't it, really, Chris? Because you look at his best club work and you think Fiorentina. And he had a terrific sporting director in Pantaleo Corvino. And he's not going to have that. He's clearly not going to have that at Valencia. So, you know, also there are big questions for Prandelli to answer from his last spell at Galatasaray, where he was very well liked, but also very unsuccessful. You know, that was a very short-lived spell out there in Turkey. And, you know, I think to a similar extent, he might have his hands tied. So it's going to be difficult for him. Of course, he was there at the Mestalla watching that game against Atletico Madrid. And Atleti are a really good example for Valencia, because Atleti are the club that they could have been, really. You know, if you think about when they went and won the title in 2014, that was a team that was built mainly on TPO. That can be done now, of course, but you know, it gave them the base to do something. And that shows that, you know, even a club that traditionally was chaotic as Atletico Madrid, if you get half a plan with the potential they've got, I don't think it's going to take an enormous leap for them to push towards and challenging the top four. I don't think they'll get there this season, because I don't think the squad is enough. But with the right sort of support, you know, there is a window for Prandelli to do something. I think also what's interesting is they were looking at giving him a contract until the end of the season, when the negotiations started, and basically because he had them over a barrel, he was able to get 2 years out of it. Now, hopefully that will be honoured, and hopefully he'll get a little bit more space to do his work. I mean, I don't think this Valencia squad is hopeless. I mean, that they have problems, certainly down the right-hand side, where they've got that combination of Montoya and Cancelo that they can't really seem to get right at the moment. And they were never going to be any match for Felipe Luis, who I thought was outstanding again in Atletico's performance. But, you know, they've got a way to go, but it's not like they've got nothing to work with. And I guess the target for Prandelli will be European football. Champions League is too much. They're not going to get there. You know, there are a lot of better teams than them, and they really need to sort themselves out, particularly defensively. You know, you can say that Atleti only got their second goal with a breakaway right at the end, which is technically correct, but of course they also missed two penalties, and they were far superior to Valencia in every department, who needed Diego Alves to save them occasions.
Yeah, Pete Farries has that as his highlight of the week. Diego Alves saving two penalties versus Atletico. We talked about him last week. 19 of his 41 spot kicks he saved in La Liga. Absolutely staggering. Andy, wow. Andy, thank you so much for coming on the show, mate. Really appreciate it.
Real pleasure, fellas. Speak to you soon.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
He's good, isn't he?
He is.
Too good.
Too good. Too much. That's why we don't invite him on every week.
Exactly.
Otherwise, people would be like, well, those two don't know what they're talking about.
Exactly, mate. Okay. Chris, continue on from La Liga. Barcelona lost. Tell us a little bit about what happened this weekend. I'm going to give you roughly a minute to try and get through everything.
Okay, well, 4-3 they lost at Celta Vigo. Remember last season, Luis Enrique's former club, Celta Vigo, they lost 4-2 there.
4-1, wasn't it? Was it 4-1?
If we've only got a minute, it was
4-2. Sorry.
Okay, they conceded four times away at Celta last season and they've done the same this season. It was a bonkers game. Great week for Atletico because they took advantage of that and they're now top of the table, having won at Valencia, as Andy alluded to. Great week for Diego Simeone's team. Tiny Eibar got a draw away at Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Phenomenal result.
Madrid press unhappy.
Yeah, I saw something in Marcus saying crisis. That word is becoming the new, you know, when people used to say literally all the time when it wasn't literal. Crisis needs to be saved for a crisis, in my view. There we go. Spanish press, take that. And finally, Sevilla are now up to third in the table above Barcelona and Jorge Sampaoli, who he seemed to be linked with everybody after leading Chile to Copa America.
Mm.
He finally picked Sevilla, or Sevilla picked him, and it's so far, so very good.
Luka Modric has a serious injury. I think he's getting operated on and a knee problem. That's a concern for them. And interestingly, from the Barca game, Marc-Andre ter Stegen, with the ball at his feet, kicked the ball against an opposition player. It essentially went in the goal. And I can't help but think about the whole Claudio Bravo playing with your feet business.
If you'd given me more than a minute, I could have gone. Now,
sorry.
See what happens is you've given me a minute. I've brushed over things and then you've come in.
All right, I'm sorry.
The killer facts. That is a very interesting point there.
Serie A, Chris. Juve.
Yes.
It's looking ominous, isn't it, in Serie A at the moment? They're 4 clear already.
Yeah, well, remember when they lost the Derby d'Italia to Inter a few weeks ago?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
They won 3 on the spin since, and I think Napoli have won once in that time, and all of a sudden they're 4 clear, and you just think, not again with that team. I mean, they are frightening, aren't they? I don't know. I don't want to write off the Serie A title race, but if it gets any more than 4 points, it suddenly does look very dangerous league, I think.
3-0 win at Empoli. 1 for Dybala, his first in the league this season. 2 for Gonzalo Higuain. He's looking great. He still doesn't look really in full fitness. You know, like, he came back and clearly wasn't in shape.
Yeah.
Having just agreed one of the biggest transfers in football history.
It's one of those players, I don't know if he might always look slightly more portly.
Portly? I haven't heard the word portly in ages.
Because he's obviously not overweight or anything.
No, but at Napoli, I feel like he went on they got him on some sort of special diet and he went super good.
Well, yeah, he's
better. And then
he's still scoring. And that goal he scored against Dinamo Zagreb was lovely.
Is great, isn't he?
He is great. I mean, it's an epic amount of money, but they've always had the defence and now you feel that going forward they have, you know, they really are a special team. And I still think that the Champions League is, well, it's been stated by Buffon and by Allegri, I think, as, you know,
as target one. I saw something very sad at the weekend. Roma played Inter on Sunday night, Chris. You're going to tell us about the game in a moment. But I saw that Roma had taken to hiring a sort of little Italian car and having some rather attractive women in Roma kits trying to flog tickets in the city centre.
Dear.
For Roma Inter.
Yes.
State of Italian football a little bit.
Actually,
isn't it?
I saw Daniele De Rossi speaking about this, and he said we have to sort the ground situation out quickly.
Yeah,
it's just they play in that vast arena miles away from the city. It's, I don't know, you know, it's in the modern era when everything's so accessible and you don't have to go to the games.
Italian football's behind in that regard.
Yeah,
isn't it
is.
Apart
yeah.
from Juve's stadium, which I've been through now.
So
it's a little bit behind. But they beat Inter regardless, 2-1. Chris,
tell us
about it.
If you were on Twitter following the game at all and didn't happen to watch it, then Samir Handanovic's save was the main thing because he pulled off an absolute worldie. Adam Summerton, friend of the show, said he thinks he's in the top 5 goalkeepers in the world, which is interesting. But, I mean, he has been excellent this season and for the last couple. Big win, Edin Dzeko scored. It's not quite happening for De Boer. Is it? He arrived.
I was sceptical anyway, but it's early days and he hasn't had time with that squad. As
well, exactly, and he arrived very late at a squad and a club in a little bit of turmoil. He came out and said stupid mistakes cost them. Good win for Roma. Yeah, Udinese have changed their coach. But yeah, I still think, Juve being 4 points clear, you just think, uh-oh, here we go.
Oh, we got some hilarious tweets in. Where are these, mate? Let me find this. Someone was live tweeting us during Milan's game. Mason Lemon. I hope you're watching this Milan-Sassuolo game a few minutes later. Milan come back. Unbelievable against Sassuolo. So Milan were trailing 3-1 to Sassuolo at home. And when I saw the goals, a couple of unbelievable goals in there. They went on to win 4-3. Massive win for AC Milan.
Old
Thank
defensive
you, Mason.
Italian football. Hey? Actually, I saw something which Roma put out the other day, which is quite witty, about the game against Inter. They said, another typically defensive Italian game of football. 36 shots, 13 corners.
God.
It was an epic. And as you said, a shame that that stadium, well, getting 80,000 a week is a huge shout for any football club, frankly. Mm. But even getting, you know, even getting 50, 60 and making it really great is proving difficult for Roma at the moment.
Certainly is. Mario Balotelli, not in the Italy squad, as was speculated in the media last week. Gianpiero Ventura, now the head coach, of course, after taking over from Antonio Conte.
Mm. I'm not that surprised. Just yet. One swallow doesn't make a summer. I enjoyed that. I wanted to get that on the show. I think Balotelli, if he continues to score for Nice, will absolutely be in the squad.
Yeah.
Probably before the turn of the year, but a new coach. He didn't have a pre-season, remember? He's not fully fit yet. And they won their first game comfortably against Israel. So, you know, I think the good thing from Balotelli's point of view is this isn't an era where Italian football is best with great centre-forwards at all.
No.
So if he's fit and firing,
he'll be in that squad when
he'll probably be in that team. But just yet, I think it's too early to bring him in.
Okay, Chris, we're going to talk about the key internationals to watch out for this week because we're heading into the international break. But I tasked you with finding out the latest in Belgium because John O'Donnell said, you haven't covered any Belgian stuff yet. So can you do that?
Of course. Can we speak about cycling? No, we can't.
No, we can't.
The classic season isn't for a while.
You've got to go on another podcast to do that, Chris.
Belgium Classico this weekend. That's why we're speaking about Belgium football today. Anderlecht beat Standard Liège away from home. Wasn't a great game by all accounts. Got the winner with 11 minutes to go from Teodorczyk. First away win in Liège since 2012 for Anderlecht.
Okay.
That was pretty good for them. Do you remember when Stephen Defour, they hung that effigy, or they had that big banner, the Standard Liège fans?
Oh, what was it? They had him being decapitated.
Yeah.
I love saying decapitated in unison. They had him decapitated.
Not literally, otherwise he wouldn't be at Burnley.
No, exactly.
Yes, it's a great fixture, that, and Liège is a proper footballing town, industrial coal mining, the stadium. It's one of those right on the pitch. I'd really like to go to that game, actually, particularly in Liège. I think it would be a belter.
Mm.
And elsewhere, Club Brugge, who were thumped in the Champions League.
Yes.
Twice now by Leicester and now Copenhagen. They beat Genk 1-0 and they're up to third. So it was two big games on Sunday.
Good news for Michel Prudhomme. Okay, Chris, international break. Some people are not massive fans of the international break, but I've tasked you with finding some fixtures that everyone should tune into. And of course, England does not make your list. So
Malta, England, Malta, no?
No. So come on, let's have it. So you've got Italy, Spain here. Why should we watch that on Thursday?
Not that long since they met in the last 16 at Euro, when Italy ended Spain's domination. They're two massive footballing nations, aren't they?
It's pretty obvious, isn't it? Well, you should watch that.
Well, yeah, but they're both under two new coaches as well, Julen Lopetegui, with Spain. Interesting. And also, I think because only the top team definitely goes through to the World Cup.
Yeah.
Remember that. So one of these teams is going to have to go into the playoffs. Or the League of Nations, which is, you know, going to have to be explained in another podcast.
maybe we can do that on the next show.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll do that.
Yeah, so, you know, one of those isn't going to qualify automatically, and they are two of the biggest countries in the world when it comes to what they've won.
No Juan Mata in the Spain squad. Portugal Andorra is your second choice.
Yeah, just because they lost to Switzerland in their first game as the European champions. Isn't it amazing how football in the space of a couple of months. You can go from winning in Paris to losing in Switzerland.
Ronaldo was injured for that. They must have him back for that, I'm guessing.
It's Andorra as well, though. They might not need Ronaldo. I mean, they should thump them. And last but not least, and I think if you're looking for an atmosphere and an occasion, it is...
Where am I booking my flights to, Chris?
You're booking your flights to Kosovo.
Okay.
Yes. You'll have to change in Vienna, probably. It's their first ever home game. And it is against Croatia. Yeah, exactly.
Dear Lord.
It's going to be a belter. They drew with Finland. It's their first campaign as an independent country, which they've wanted for a long time. They got the point away. And amazingly, I think six of their players didn't get international clearance by FIFA until the day of the game. One of them, Valon Berisha, because they couldn't play for Kosovo, had played for other countries.
Nations, yeah.
But then, obviously, you can't then exclude them now that you've given Kosovo, you know, the status. Didn't come through till just before the game, and he scored the penalty to get them a point. But I think it'll be absolutely bouncing in Škoda.
Okay, Chris. Trivia tease answer, please. From at... What is it? At Big Footy Teasers.
Yes, at Big Footy Teasers.
Friends of the show. We're going to give us a teaser every week.
And the answer to this week's
is... You're scrambling around your phone.
I'm scrambling around my phone.
Oh, my God. If you could see this.
It's all around speaking around the issue, Rob, as we all know. hang on. Actually, no. It's on my WhatsApp, isn't it? Here we go.
Oh, my God.
Other messaging services are available. Here we go. So, these are the players who have won four... Oh, yeah. European League titles and played in the Premier League.
Six of them, Chris.
Six of them. One is Zlatan Ibrahimovic, as you said.
Got that. Yeah.
Any more?
No. I haven't had time to think. I was too busy speaking to Andy Brassel.
Yuri Jarasic.
Okay. Wow, I didn't know that.
Iron Robin.
Okay, so we're going Holland, England, Spain, Germany.
Well, he needs one more. He's,
why does he?
He's only played in the Prem. Four different European League titles.
No, doesn't say that. Where is it? Name the six players to win four different European League titles and play in the Prem.
Okay, yeah, well, yeah, there we go.
No, it's just four different ones, you fool.
What, and it doesn't... Okay.
Well, Prem included.
Oh, Prem included, okay.
Yeah.
Matthijs Kesman.
So he must have won it with... Did he win it with Chelsea? So he won it Chelsea...
Holland, Turkey.
Oh, God, can you be bothered to do it? Come on, else. Who else?
Wesley Sneijder.
UK, that makes sense.
And I don't think
there's
anyone...
some Dutchies in there.
Don't think anyone would get the last one.
Oh, yeah, want to bet?
Yeah.
I don't know who it is.
Rade Prica.
Give me that.
Remember him? I think it was called Prica. He played for Sunderland, did he?
Played Sunderland and won all the Nordic leagues.
And also he won the Israeli top flight.
How does Big Footy Teasers look through every...
I don't know. Far too much time on his hands.
If you think Big Footy Teasers has got this wrong, let us know, but he's probably got it right.
It's good, though. Good little thing. Because everyone goes, Zlatan. Nobody goes, Rade Prica. Not even the most ardent Sunderland supporter. It was Sunderland he played for, wasn't it?
I don't know, mate.
Hang on, just let me have a quick look on Wikipedia. I've got him up here. He did. He played for Sunderland. He played six
times.
Oh,
he won the league at Sunderland, did he?
He won the league at Sunderland, amazingly. We all remember that.
Oh, glory days at the Stadium of Light.
Roker Park. No, I think it was the Stadium of Light.
Okay, Chris, we're finished. I'm going to ask people, please leave us a review on iTunes. And if you like the show as well, don't just leave us a review on iTunes, but tweet and let people know that you're enjoying this.
Let all your friends know.
Let all your mates know, all your millions of followers know. Chris... what you got on this week? International break, so we're just doing a bit of international coverage.
Yeah, just chilling out a little bit. Watching England. Probably not, actually. I'll be watching my three tips.
Of course you will. Thank you very much. We'll be back for you next Monday. This is Football in Europe.